Welcome to the 12th episode of the Dog Pound Daily Podcast. In today's a special episode, Andrew and myself and a special guest are all in the same studio. Andrew, how excited are you for this?
Pretty excited. Definitely a little bit easier than doing it over FaceTime.
Yes, and our special guest who will not speak yet, who will speak later, is my roommate Brandon.
When spoken to.
Exactly. So Brandon is here in a, you know, sort of producer role, kind of watching, just in case anything goes wrong. But we want to start off.
Or consultative role, I would think.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce that word.
Consultative? Is it?
We'll agree to disagree.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to move on.
Anda, how are you? Good to have you on.
It's great to be here, guys. Been a longtime fan of the show. I think I might have been one of the first subscribers. It was part of the in the GoGo package, I remember.
Brandon was actually
donated $5. I bought Steven Chipotle 1 week, and
Chipotle is $7.75. But Brandon's one of our original subscribers and my roommate, so naturally he has to be invited on once in a while. But I want to start with a bold prediction had by Andrew in past episodes. Andrew, and that prediction involves a Mr. Kizer.
It does. I predicted a while ago, I think DeShone Kizer's going to win the starting job. Ooh. And it seems that he's slowly inching his way there, Steven.
Well, there was a report from Mary Kay Cabot, who were, you know, just huge fans.
Best friends.
Close. She's hot. Close friends. Thanks for saying that. On the air. She had a report that Kizer's gaining ground on Kessler, but that was after just, you know, what, 3 days of minicamp. But I know it's a culmination from the whole offseason. It's not like when they're not practicing, they're just sitting at home. They're working there every day. But do you think Kessler had a real stronghold on the starting spot, or Hugh Jackson just named him the starter just to establish some sort of stability and not be like, all right, our, you know, second round pick, he's our starting quarterback now?
Well, I think Kessler earned it. I would say a little by default, but mostly by the fact that he did play decently well last year at certain times. So I think he had a right to be the starter coming into camp, but my thought all along was if you've got a guy like DeShone Kizer that can prove that he can pick up the playbook well enough to be at the same level as Cody Kessler, then there's no point in starting Cody Kessler because DeShone Kizer's got so much more upside. Yeah. So I just think if you've got DeShone Kizer and Cody Kessler between the two, and Brock Osweiler's going up there, he's moving up the depth chart too. You know, it's one of those things where you hope one separates themselves and that you're not stuck with three at the same level, but I think Kizer's going to separate himself here once training camp starts.
And it's interesting because a lot of the talk is Kizer versus Kessler, but as I like to say, you know, Brock Osweiler's got the most experience. He did win a playoff game last year against Connor Cook and the Oakland Raiders, got destroyed by the Patriots, but he does have that experience, and I feel like he has to be emerging as kind of a clubhouse leader at this point, because he's, you know, other players and the super young receiving core, you know, aside from Kenny Britt, may look to him for that experience or talk to him about the playoffs and just, you know, kind of start that relationship.
What do you think, Brandon?
I still think they maybe lean towards Kessler going number one. It's really tough to say right now at this point of the season until we really start training camp starts. We see them in preseason action, and they're all practically, I'd say, roughly the same talent level at this point. I think certainly Kizer is the highest upside, but maybe Kessler with his experience with his team, I personally think he might get the nod as of right now.
That's a very political answer, Brandon. On this show, we're only about bold predictions, so we're going to need you to be a little bit more bold in your answers, if that's okay.
Yeah, we'll get Brandon back on the air in a few minutes here. Let him recover. Think of a bold prediction. But yeah, I have to agree with Brandon. You know, we talk a lot about the Browns in our house, and it's not like we're saying, "Oh, like we drafted this stud rookie, and it's a matter of days for Kessler." It's pretty even.
I don't agree, man. I think
in camp right now, maybe not talent level or upside.
Yeah, I was listening to the radio, and even Mary Kay said that Hugh Jackson's going to have to be talked off the ledge of starting DeShone Kizer week one. You know, it just goes back to even the other teams that drafted those rookie quarterbacks. You know, how long until, like, I think I said this before previously, these coaches are going to say until they're blue in the face that they're going to wait for these guys until they're ready. or that they've got to work their way up the depth chart. But we all know once training camp comes around and they start seeing him run with the ones, and if their ability to develop their mechanics and the playbook is there, you know, they're going to start. You got to get him on the field sooner rather than later.
Yeah, the long NFL offseason, especially with a team like the Browns where there's no definitive quarterback, always leads to this, who's going to win the competition, which has become an annual thing when it really should never be a thing. You should draft a quarterback, think of even a Derek Carr, Matt Stafford, and say, all right, this is our starter. But they've had success. And with the Browns, it's, oh, well, I think it's Kessler. I think it's Kaiser. I think it's, if you're crazy, I think it's Brock or Kevin Hogan. Well, it's probably not Kevin Hogan.
No.
But
Hogan does know best, though. Sorry, I derailed you.
My total train wreck.
Here.
Oh, Brandon has a thought, though.
He's back.
Yeah. Well, Errol, one point you made before that I agree with you, Andrew, is that we definitely need to see Kaiser play a lot this year. We need to know what we're going to get, because odds are we're going to be in the top five next year, and our top two prospects are likely going to be Rosen and Donaldson. So
we Sam Darnold, Brandon.
Donaldson, sorry.
Josh Donaldson. For the Toronto Blue Jays.
Sam Darnold.
So we are going to need to see
rookie mistake.
What we're going to have with Kaiser, because it's very likely that we may be in position to draft another top quarterback prospect.
Can't argue with that point, Andrew.
No, I completely agree. Honda, you know, we should have you on more often. I completely agree.
Nah.
I think I made that point. I wrote an article on it. It's just, if you're going to have a top pick, I mean, I still don't think, even if Kaiser shows, unless Kaiser is truly a lights out rookie prospect, you know, like Cam Newton, where you're going to bank on the fact that he's going to be very, very good.
Are you comparing
no
Kaiser to Cam Newton on the record?
No. What I'm saying is, if he has a Cam Newton type year, like RG3, where you're like, we're definitely moving forward with this guy, you've got to still be able to consider those top prospects at 1 and 2 or wherever you're at in the draft.
Are you saying Robert Griffin III in his current form is equivalent to a player like Cam Newton?
No, I'm saying their rookie years were very comparable in terms of electricity and ability to lead their team to successful seasons.
And Washington kind of got the raw end of that comparison.
Yes.
But I know what you mean. So you think Kaiser's going to open week one?
Yep.
Do you think he'll beat the Steelers with me in attendance? Even if I'm not there, will he beat the Steelers?
No. Mike Tomlin knows how to game plan against, especially a rookie quarterback. It's going to be tough.
But that new line, though.
I agree. I think there's going to be definitely some bright spots. I think the fact that they're going to actually run the ball this year is going to be a...
Allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah. That was something that was really confusing to me last year, is why they didn't run the ball. There were a lot of games where a lot of it was out of hand in the first quarter, but this year hopefully they can recommit to the run and give Kaiser or Kessler, whoever the number one quarterback is, a better shot to keep them in the game versus having to have them throw the ball 50 times.
Think about your Baltimore game that you guys went to.
Yes.
Crowell had a great start, and they didn't touch the ball in the second half.
85-yard touchdown. How many times?
I cried. I always openly cry. It just depends if there's other people around. But yeah, that was fun. And then I cried later because we had to walk back.
If you cry when no one's around, do you really? It's like if a tree falls.
You do.
You do cry. Those are real tears, I'm afraid.
Were you crying? Yes, I was. Thank you for noticing. But yeah, abandoning the running game is, Hugh Jackson can say they're going to commit to it this year, but it's June, so I don't really believe them.
I mean, they're hyping up Crowell, man. He's only, quote, scratched the surface, and Ricardo Lewis
There was air quotes there, just to be clear.
Yeah, there was another article about how Ricardo Lewis could be the breakout receiver. He's playing with a lot of confidence, and I get that, but I just prove it. You know, I can read these stories all day long, but I remember the same thing being said about guys like Evan Moore and
Chancey
Stuckey, and I mean, God knows what other receivers that we've thrown.
What about Steve Hyden?
Steve Hyden, Muhammad Massaqua, Brian Rabisky, like that. These guys are all playing with confidence, but come out and stink. So just prove it on the field. I don't want to hear about any more of these second year receivers. Just prove it to me in training camp.
Yeah, that's just the news cycle in the offseason. I mean, look at us. Just a couple of guys sitting here trying to think of topics to talk about. Imagine being a beat writer or a site expert for Dog Pound Daily. and you have to come up with ideas all the time. You kind of have to do the Crowell's poised for a breakout year. Ricardo Lewis, who notoriously in the scouting reports has stone hands, is poised for a breakout year. I'm a personal fan of Rashard Higgins.
Hollywood.
So I'm going to go on the record and say he's going to have a breakout year with no real reason behind it other than I like him and he's fun.
There you go.
I don't think Jordan Payton's going to have a big year because...
Is he still at UCLA? Is he still graduating or whatever?
He showed up to camp in, like, July after he graduated. I don't know
preseason week three.
How the school year works at UCLA. And then he got suspended the last four games of the year when he probably would have got some playing time.
On to who's your breakout player of the 2017 season?
Any Let's position. Say Duke Johnson. Maybe with a better line. Maybe they work in a little short passing game with inexperienced quarterbacks. I think he's kind of like almost like that, like... who's the guy from the Patriots? James White. I don't think he runs the ball better than White, but can catch the ball in the backfield. Maybe 50 rushing yards, 50 receiving yards, ends up getting a touchdown.
Fantasy all-star.
Yeah, fantasy.
I mean,
sleeper.
That's a guy, too, that even last year everyone thought that he was going to be a breakout player. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe...
Well, they were so bad, though.
Yeah, and maybe with the loss of Terrell Pryor and the fact that the wide receiving core is a little bit lacking. Maybe that's their plan too, is to utilize both Crowell and Duke Johnson on the field at the same time. I mean, it's only an added weapon. You know, there's only so many there's not a linebacker that's going to be able to cover him other than probably the guy that's across from him, which is Jamie Collins. You know, that's one of the most athletic linebackers in the league. So if you can utilize Duke Johnson in mismatches, I think that's a definitely a great way to keep a defense off balance.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I love the predictions, I love the hype, but I don't know, I do think Duke Johnson is probably one of the most guaranteed players who will have some success, just one of the most talented. It just depends how much he's going to get worked.
Well, it's contract year, so, I mean, if they want to, if they think that he's worth, you know, re-signing, I think they'll give him, or let him prove it, you know. I think that's a fair thing. I think Crowell, too, is getting ready for a contract year as well, too, right?
Yeah, with that one-year tender.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's gonna if the Browns are gonna put money in Crowell and Duke Johnson's pockets, I think they're gonna make him prove it. So I think that at least should equate to some commitment to the running game.
I just want one of them to get 1,000 yards, and not like based off 10 long runs. Like Crowell's season last year, statistically, is, you know, yards per rush and average was high, but that's because he'd had like no carries and bust off like 70-yard runs.
Which is still strange as to why they wouldn't run the ball more. And I I'm not going to sit here and say that the game flow was, that was definitely a reason for it. I think it was like a Bengals game where RG3 was like 0-for-6 or something in the first half. That first game he came back and he had a 0 passer rating. Like they were
is
down.
That bad?
Oh, they were down 14-0 in the first two possessions of the game, and I was like, "Well, this one's over." You know, I think that was like one of the last games that we thought we would have a chance to win, because Browns were coming off a bye. It was RG3 was coming back. Yeah, I know.
None of these sound like good signs. Like, no. RG3's coming back from his 2012 stint at Baylor.
I'm pretty sure that I thought that week 10 was going to be a win because...
Was that the Jets?
No, that was RG3. That was that Bengals game when he came after the... I think, right? After the bye? Either way, whatever that Bengals game was. Because I think I was... I didn't expect them to come out so flat after the bye.
You
like
didn't.
RG3 was like so bad in that first game that I was like, he's had so long to prepare to come back. You know, he can't be that bad. And he was that bad.
Well, he's all... I mean, mostly been that bad. Since after that first year where he was destroyed by the Shanahans. But that's neither here nor there anymore.
Sounds like a Game of Thrones thing. Like.
Destroyed by the Shanahans.
House Shanahan.
Destroyed him. Naturally, but who knows? I mean...
I think we're running out of things to talk about, Steven.
Oh, yeah. I have plenty.
Ando, plenty. What you got? That's why we bring
topic. Horrible right. Questions for you.
Unfortunately, unfortunately, we tend to talk pessimistic about the Browns just because of the state of the franchise. What's one optimistic thing you're looking forward to, or one thing you see this team growing, or what aspect of this team do you see that's improving?
You go first.
The defense. I'm excited to watch the defense. So many young guys that can make an impact. You look at the draft last year, you had Corey Coleman, Emmanuel Ogba, And it just a lot, and Carl Nassib, but mostly a lot of guys that weren't like DeMario Davis. You know, they didn't have Jamie Collins. You just had a, kind of a lot of guys that really didn't make any impact or that didn't give you like the didn't give you a good feeling when you were walking out there on Sunday. Like, you knew the Browns defense was bad. Now they've got Myles Garrett, Jabril Peppers, Njoku's on offense, but still another great pick. Ogunjobi, Caleb Brantley. You know, they've added some pieces. Jason McCourty, who's the other? Calvin Pryor. I mean, they've added guys that may or may not turn out, but, you know, at least it, they're trying to make the talent level better. And they've done that, at least in the rookie class, which is something that they've lacked for so long that I just can't wait to watch Myles Garrett and Jabril Peppers play. Steven, what is your...
I'm going to go with the sucker answer and say I'm excited and optimistic for the quarterback play of whoever starts, because that's the only thing I really look forward to is, because I mean in the sense of, if the quarterbacks aren't good week one or two, then we're in for a long year.
Yes, very much so.
So I'm looking forward to seeing Cody Kessler in his second year after an 0-8 start. Although three of those losses he left earlier was benched. So, I mean, that's not a good thing. But I
one
think,
would say getting benched as a quarterback is not.
Well, that was in that Thursday night game.
He was concussed, too, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he was concussed twice. And that Thursday night game, Hugh Jackson brought in Josh McCown, who proceeded to throw some classic gunslinger interceptions with no regard for the offense.
Eight-step drop thrown off his back foot, just whipping it
while
down.
Getting speared.
Well, to be fair,
to watch him on the Jets. Oh. It's going to be just a shock Freudian, awful football.
Browns-Jets is going to be, like, the number one pick Super Bowl.
To be fair, I wanted Josh McCown to... I'm like, just throw it up to Terrell Pryor. Like, what's the worst that can happen? Because at that point, I mean, they're so bad. They need to win a game. I'm like, he might be able to win a jump ball and just catch a touchdown. And he just...
Are you referring to week two against Baltimore?
No, the loss in the Thursday night football game. Oh,
both were tough.
Brandon, what is your optimistic... point for the Browns to watch this season?
I'm excited for both the Lions, offense and defense, but I'm excited for a healthy Joe Hayden. He seems like he's been banged up for the past 2 years. Hopefully he can get back to being one of the best cover corners back in the NFL.
I hope he gets back to that level. I mean,
he's got some help too.
Yeah, I think Greg Williams calling him out was definitely a wake-up call for him, because he's, I wouldn't say complacent, because the Browns have just been bad. I think you're just downtrodden by so many losing seasons that...
Going through the motions.
Yeah, you know, and he's hurt. It's tough to... I mean, he played through the injuries, which is a sign of, like, he's a strong player. But, I mean, all these losing seasons and changeover has to take a toll on you eventually. So it'll be nice to see that hopefully Greg Williams can get some, like... I don't want to say positive energy, because he's a very positive guy, but, like...
Rejuvenated.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good word. That was a good word, Brandon.
All right, I'll throw the next topic out.
All right.
I've had a lot of time to think during your monologues.
Lay it on me.
What is the one sign, the one thing that could happen early in the year that would signal doom for you regarding the Browns?
Oh, where do
like,
I
what's,
start?
Like, what's one play that has to happen or scenario? It could even be in the front office. Let's just rule out, like, firing Sashi Brown, because that's just not going to happen. And no injuries. Like, an instance on the... So it can't be, like... It has to be realistic, but like it could be like a trade or Jimmy Haslam goes to jail. My column.
I don't think that like Jimmy Haslam go to jail is obviously a big story, but I think it's maybe one of those things where in the first couple weeks of the season the Browns are like in contention.
Like they're 1-1.
No, I mean they're
in the games.
Like they're winning the games in the third and fourth quarter. You know, even last year there were times where they had a lead at halftime, and they just couldn't close it out. If that trend continues, I think part of that had to do with a lack of talent on the overall roster, not having the ability to close out games on defense, and you couldn't keep the defense off the field. Offense couldn't move the ball. Defense is winded in the fourth quarter. I think if they can be able to just make a few plays that separate themselves from a bad, like make themselves a decent team versus a bad team, I think that's a good thing to watch out for. But if it turns out to be like, if they're blowing games in the fourth quarter again, or they're just not experienced enough to close it out, I think that's one thing that could possibly just destroy the positivity, I guess, in that locker room.
All right, I'll answer mine before passing it off to Brandon. I'm going to say my thing would be a 28-3 halftime deficit against the Steelers in week one. because that would just it's not like it's a rare sight against the Steelers, but there's been so many week one beatdowns by the Steelers to the Browns that it's everyone's excited, everyone's amped about the season to come back, and then Antonio Brown has two touchdowns, Le'Veon Bell's running all over the field, and the Browns muster a field goal before halftime. And it's just, oh no. At that point, it's like, are we going to have enough time to come back? And how are we going to answer a 25-point deficit? It's the same questions. I don't want it to happen. But for me, that's my doom and gloom. Just this season's going to be a little tough. Brandon, what do you think?
For maybe too many early three and outs in offense, I felt like there's a lot of times when the game would start. Either we'd get the kickoff or after the opposing team would usually score a touchdown, is when it was three and out, punt the ball, and then the opposing offense would start with great field position. It seemed to happen a lot in the first quarter and the beginning of the third quarter, and we were quickly a bad team starting from behind. And it always seems, ever since the Browns returned, they've always just struggled to get first drive touchdowns. And I know with this offense, that's still unreasonable to ask for them, but I think just to push the ball, if you could flip the field, make them start, or the opposing team start their own 10 within their own 20, that's just what I would look for and hope. If that doesn't happen, then it's going to be another long season.
Both great points. I like Anna's point a lot, because that was one thing that was just severely frustrating last year, was the fact that even when there was a chance for them to come back, it was just you would get, like I said, they'd run the ball on first down, then an incomplete pass, and then it's third and 10, and you're like, well, fingers crossed. But they would get the ball. The opposing team would get the ball either at the 45 or in Brown's territory, and that's not how you're going to win a football game.
Well, it's run on first down, second and 8, incomplete pass, and a 6-yard pass.
Catch and run.
To Evan Moore.
Evan Moore.
For a 3-and-out. But yeah, like Brandon said, that's just the... That's definitely a big sign of doom. It's when they come out and there's just you. That's like you watch any Patriots game. It's all right. We're gonna drive down the field, and the fans are like, all right. It's like watching the Cavs. We expected it.
Yeah.
But with the Browns, if they score an opening drive touchdown, it's a shock.
It is. When did it almost happen? Was it the last game of the year? Maybe it was that San Diego game.
There was
a
long streak, I remember, where
they didn't.
Yeah.
When they do, it's much more surprising than when they don't.
Yeah.
Just score. Even a field goal.
And to Steven's point about the schedule, the NFL did not do the Browns any favors this year with the schedule. You've got three divisional games, I believe, in the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, right? You've got Pittsburgh to start.
Cincy in week 4.
But either way, you're starting off against Pittsburgh, which is just not an ideal matchup for any defense. Not the best. You're going against three of the best players at their position.
It is kind of. I know the NFL tries to do those divisional matchups, but it's always division week one. This year Steelers and Steelers week 17.
Yeah. The good news is that we won't have to watch them on primetime this year.
We get to watch them at 9:30 though when they're in London.
That'll be good. Get the misery out of the way early. So we got Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Indy, Cincinnati. Oh, we did the schedule game already, but. How do you think Baltimore is going to be this year?
I think the same. Just who have they added anyone on offense? Any wide receivers?
Jeremy Maclin.
He's down.
Joseph.
Flowers, he was hurt all last year.
Man, who's their? Oh, Terrence West is their running back.
Meh. Yeah, I just think again, 9-7 defense carries them.
They drafted a lot of good defensive pieces.
I think I'm a little more interested to see with Cincinnati if they're going to bounce back after a rough year. If I believe Green got hurt last year.
Yeah, towards the end, he got hurt right. But that was he was out for the Browns game. Wasn't
oh yeah, it? I think that yeah, that's why and a lot of people thought they couldn't
come close.
But I still see Pittsburgh, then Cincinnati, Baltimore, and then Cleveland.
Boo. But no, it's tough to argue with Pittsburgh not being in first. They were a win away from the Super Bowl.
They started off poorly, too, this year, didn't they? Or last year, weren't they? They lost to the Ravens, who were, winless to start.
Games,
yeah, but they lost to... Remember, Boswell missed all those field goals, or whoever their kicker was missed all those field goals early on.
We need, a resident Steelers person on, so we can just talk trash, but then, when the Steelers beat the Browns... We just won't talk to him, but if we need tidbits, you're trying to remember, we could just have him on.
Yeah, not everyone is. It's tough to be as committed to Steelers football when you're a super fan of the Cleveland Browns. So, it's a tough life being a super fan, especially when they're so
super
bad.
Fan. I feel like you're the guy at the game who's yelling at me that he could stand in front of me because he's a super fan.
No, it's a super fan would be the guy that turns around and tries to pump up the crowd, thinking that his pumping up arms motion is going to get the crowd riled up.
I always get irrationally
it's
angry.
Down.
I get irrationally angry when that, what you just said, happens at the game, and people are like, if we don't make any noise, they're not going to get a stop. I go, we have the worst defensive front seven in the league. Le'Veon Bell is going to get the third and two. And then it's like, it'll be five third downs in the same drive. And the people sit there, and it's almost like they had amnesia. And it's like, it's third down. Like, calm down.
Well, the thing is, they don't even have to, like if you're the Steelers, like, all you have to do is run the ball twice, and or you can run it three times.
Le'Veon
and, like,
Bell doesn't lose yards.
What are the odds that they're not going to get a first down? You know, like, they could throw a screen pass to Antonio Brown and get 8 yards. Like, they're just going to move
and just
the ball.
Dive across it.
And I think I think Brandon touched on it. Just moving the ball on offense is a huge, you've got to have a quarterback that can do it. And that's why Cody Kessler got pulled in that Thursday night game.
Yeah, they have to do it so the defense can't just keep blitzing. Because once you establish that you're weak on offense, the defense will just pressure your young quarterback or any quarterback who's not doing well and just keep coming at you. That's when you need to open it up, such as deep balls to former Brown Terrell Pryor, or catch him off guard with a draw or just anything to switch it up. But
that's what I'm worried about too, is obviously I picked DeShone Kizer to start week one, but it'll be interesting to see how he faces a live pass rush. Because it's one thing to sit around in your shorts and t-shirt and throw a football around, but when there's a 300-pound Myles Garrett coming off the edge towards you, it's a little bit more scary than doing it.
But even then in practice, you don't get hit if you're a quarterback. So Myles Garrett's going to be coming off the edge at him, but even he's not going to be going 100%. He's going to be letting up. You got to get him in there against the Steelers and see how he reacts. And that's, well, I guess preseason – but he'll be going up against, like, second-teamer and third-teamers in preseason, so.
Thank God they took Myles Garrett. Like what if they did?
What if they traded down and took Mitch Trubisky?
No, I mean, like, just thinking about, like, how the roster, like, after the draft, it's easy to be like, God, just, they took DeShone Kizer in the second round, so at least that position was addressed. But, like, thank God they say, like, if Myles Garrett doesn't turn out, you know,
everyone
would have
taken
okay.
him.
Yeah.
We'd take Watson and Trubisky and make them battle it out.
Yeah, oh, my God.
I saw someone, a hot take on the Facebook page was that, the Dog Pound Daily Facebook page, was that they should take Watson and then cut him to teach him a lesson. And it had to do with him saying something, like, baited in a question. And it was like, I know what we should do with our number one pick. We should take him and cut him. I was like, yeah, that'll show the rest of the league that we mean business here. Like, what an... Like, I'm fine with hot takes. I'm not really fine, but, like, I know they exist, so I live with them. But when they're just, I don't even know the word. Just
insane. Dumbfounded.
Yeah. I'm just in pain. Like, I keel over and just start coughing.
And you know that guy thinks, if he was GM of the Browns, oh.
Super Bowl
just,
team.
Oh, playoff team. First year, right?
We're all armchair GMs at heart. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, but we know that we're fallible.
But we don't, yeah, I was going to say, we don't
we know we're not gods.
We'll finish at 500. We're not.
Yeah. I'm not calling my Super Bowl shot here. All I'm saying is that I think I could at least do better than 1-15.
I don't know. I don't know if you know contracts like Sashi Brown
go
does.
Go play. You just don't lose.
All right, what guaranteed money do you want? But sure. I'm not sure
all
how that
of
works.
It. Yeah, that's how it works, right?
I'm kind of a big idea guy, which is how Andrew describes himself on business cards.
Steven takes care of the day-to-day. I'm more the big picture guy.
I'm more of the... Here's a philosophical thing I wrote. All right. But we have to wrap it up here with some closing thoughts because I'm hungry. We're all hungry. We got to get some food. Do you want to plug where we're going
to
eat?
We're going to go to the Willoughby Brewing Company in Willoughby,
home
Ohio.
Of friends and good food.
Great
Willoughby
beer.
Brewing Company.
Yes, great beer. And I'm going
brewed
to
by your father, correct?
Yes, very much so.
That's why we're plugging this.
Shameless plug. Big fan.
Would you say your dad's beer is better than Coors Light?
Very much so. It's actually weird. Like, I don't like craft beer outside of, like, and it definitely sounds like a homer here, but I, like, don't like craft beer outside of my dad's beer. Like, I'll drink my dad's beer all day long, but when it comes to, like, other, like, he wants me to try all this stuff, and I'm like, I just want to drink yours. I don't.
Wow. Sweet. Not only was that a nice plug for Willoughby Brewing Company's beer, nice, but that was just a nice, like I said, good good happy family. Happy belated Father's Day, Andrew's father.
It's a nice it's a family environment from like Mondays through Wednesdays.
And then it's a hellhole.
Like every day between noon and 6. And then every time after 6 p.m., it's like Mentor High School 2012 reunion. Yeah,
it is my favorite thing about the place, which is not a bad thing. It's half of it is people in the 1986 AFC Championship generation. Then the other half is in the, do you remember that Browns Jets game generation?
Yeah.
And it just doesn't gel.
It's a nice mix. It's a nice mix. A
lot of leather coats on one side, a lot of hair gel on the other side. But I guess it'd be on both sides. Older people gel their hair.
I'll ask. We'll do a study and get back to you guys next week.
Now I'm all stressed. I'm going to have to go ask all these older men about their hair. All right. I want to ask you a question that I'm going to think of right now.
All right, I got one.
Anda's got one.
Yeah. He's the favorite Cleveland Brown memory since they came back.
Oh, boy.
I got one I can start
Anda,
with.
Go ahead.
I was actually at the greatest game since they returned the Week 17 win against the Atlanta Falcons that pushed us to the playoffs. It was my first Browns game ever. Somehow my dad got great seats for like free, like 10 rows back near the 50-yard line. And I remember watching William run. Lead us all the way to the playoffs.
Steven?
That's not the greatest moment since they've been back, but...
Yes.
Objectively, it's not, but we'll go with it.
I mean, that's fine to say that as your opinion. But my favorite Browns memory, man, I don't know. I'm trying to think. When Derek Anderson threw two pick sixes before halftime in 2007.
I was literally going to say that, and I swear I was going to say, what are you going to say when they?
How about the moment right before he threw those two pick sixes? No, I'm probably going to have to say I'd say that win over the Patriots in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Peyton Hillis
was going off. Colt McCoy was playing out of his mind. And
Josh Cribbs was laying crackback blocks on Brandon Merriweather.
Oh. Gronkowski called for a fair catch and didn't catch the football on a kickoff, and the Browns got it. And it was something that you don't often see. They didn't. I watched the highlight clip actually a few days ago.
Was he like Gronk then?
Well, his name was Gronk.
Well, I know.
He was young.
Oh, okay.
Because Aaron Hernandez actually played in that game too.
Right.
So it was back during that. It's so hard because it's not like it's always like I was excited when Johnny Manziel was drafted, but obviously now that doesn't look good. But like everyone was excited, and saying you were is like looked down upon. But I'll go with that Patriots game. Andrew, close us out.
I was a huge fan of that game against Cincinnati in week two in that 2007 season.
Ooh, that big high school
Derek
game.
Like they,
first game?
Yeah.
Even after they traded Charlie Fry.
They lost, I was like 41-0 to Pittsburgh opening day or something, and then they traded Charlie Fry to the Seahawks for a 6th-round pick. And I remember we had friends on the other side of the stadium that brought a Save Us Brady.
Like a banner?
Yeah, and they were going to throw it down there because, I mean, we're like Anderson's the starter, but it's only
a matter
of time.
Let me get this straight. They were already wanted the third string quarterback in week two.
Yes. I mean, we drafted him. He's like typical first round pick that we wanted. I mean, we want to see him, you know. And then Anderson goes out and it was like 51-47. You know, it was just an absolute shootout. Braylon Edwards is catching touchdowns down the field. You know, it was just completely unexpected. And it turned out to be one of the best seasons that I've been able to witness as a Browns fan. So
that was the same year where Anderson threw those two pick sixes against the Bengals.
It was. Devastatingly enough.
Thank you for bringing it up in the positive portion. But that's all for us. We have to go eat.
I'm withering away to nothing.
I am so hungry and sweaty, which is completely unrelated. But that was our 12th episode, and we should be back next week. Do you have any plans that would disrupt you from that? I never have any plans.
No. I should be available. I don't do too much, so.
All right, we will have another episode. We want to thank Brandon Anda, who will now have to listen to his own voice as he is a subscriber. And thank you for listening.